From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Reginald Hardwick, News and Public Affairs Director at Illinois Public Media. Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m., we're bringing you interviews and in-depth stories connected to Black Central Illinoisans. This week, Black women making strides in music and comedy.
If what you want is what I want, let's start right now.
Nedora Shakur is best known as the former lead female vocalist of the hip-hop group Arrested Development. She's had a long career working with big names like Madonna and Quincy Jones. She also spent nearly three decades as the featured female vocalist of Jimmy Buffett's Coral Reefer Band. During the last week of February, she performed at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. But a few days before, she spoke with Morning Edition host Kimberly Schofield.
Go ahead, man.
What initially got you interested in music? Did you always know that you were going to become a performer or an artist?
I decided when I was about 5 years old. My dad sang, lots of my uncles and aunts sing. So there was always music in the house. My dad would have his doo-wop group rehearsing in the living room. And if they'd had company, they'd ask me to come in the living room and sing for somebody for 25 cents or something, you know.
Aww.
And I spent a lot of time at my grandmother's with my aunt who loved music, and she sang also. And she'd be doing the dishes and have the radio in the window, the little transistor radio, singing along. And I'd be listening and singing, and she'd have me sing things and record them. So it's just something that I always wanted to do. Diana Ross was one of my early influences, because I remember saying, I want to be like Diana Ross.
You said that your dad did doo-wop and you listened to Diana Ross. Did you have any sort of theme or genre in mind that you wanted to pursue, or did you just know that you loved music?
Yeah, I was a little girl, like 5, 6, 7. So mostly at our house, we listened to a lot of Motown, Curtis Mayfield, and the Impressions and Temptations, Supremes. That was the music I was, you know, familiar with. I didn't even know anything about any other styles of music at that point in my life. But as I got older, I started wanting to do house music because I love to dance. Yeah. And I started sneaking into these house clubs. And I realized the freedom in house music for writers. You can talk about whatever you want and nobody's looking down on you. Mm-hmm. I never sang gospel, but I don't mind mentioning God in a song. And in house music, you have the freedom to do that.
How did you then get into Arrested Development? Where did that come from?
In the early 90s, I'm still living in Los Angeles, and I had a little group with my two brothers, Omar, who was a rapper, and Rashid, who's a drummer. We were doing writing, and our dad went to work one day. He was a carpenter, and they were building a new school. And some people were driving down the street shooting at each other, and a stray bullet killed my father. So that kind of put a damper on what we were doing for a while. And one day I was watching television, and I saw this hip-hop group on, and there was a girl singing up in a tree. And something about it just really moved me. It was Arrested Development. At the time, they were really, really popular. And so I went out, and they were like on the cover of all the music magazines. So I bought everyone I could find. I bought the album and started doing some research on them. And I found out that the girl that was singing in the tree, who was Dion Ferris, was not a member. She was more of a guest. So I figured that I needed to be in that group.
Yes.
So I wrote them a letter and sent them some music and a picture, and I didn't hear back. And then a friend of mine who was also in the business, he called me and said he heard that Arrested Development was looking for a singer. So then I got back on my research and found out that En Vogue was opening for them. And En Vogue's band happened to be Janet Jackson's previous band from the Rhythm Nation tour, which I was a part of. So I knew all those guys, grew up with them. So I called the keyboard player and told them that I wanted to come to the show. And I needed an all access pass because I wanted to meet Arrested Development. So got that, went to the show. It was beautiful. I'm sitting in the audience like, yes, this is for me. I had already told everybody that I'm going to be in that group. I went backstage and I met Speech, and he was familiar with me based on the package that I had sent. And I auditioned right there in catering. And then we went to the dressing room and talked. And a couple weeks later, I was in the group and on my way to London to do Top of the Pops.
That's amazing.
That's how that happened. Yeah.
You've toured with a variety of artists. Are there any artists or acts that were your favorite over your career?
I got a chance to tour with Al Jarreau. That was really awesome. I felt like I was grown because, you know, it was more jazzy. Mm-hmm. I would have to say, though, my favorite, I don't know. I don't have a favorite. I loved being a part of the Rhythm Nation. That was huge for me. Arrested Development was major also because it was something I really wanted. I really loved their message. I love the fact that Speech was, it was important to him to have women and men working together in hip hop. I love the fact that they had a little country vibe with a African flair. All of that was really good. I never would have thought I would be with somebody like Jimmy Buffett, but that was awesome too. 28
years. I was wondering
years.
How that got in there. 28 years?
28 years. All that got in there was Arrested Development ended up breaking up at one point. So I just started making calls, ended up with three different opportunities. One was a hip hop group with Michael Franti that I really liked, but wouldn't have paid enough. Mm-hmm. The other was Yanni.
Oh.
And the third was Jimmy Buffett, who I had never heard of. Yanni paid the most, but when they sent me the song, I realized there was only one song in his whole show that had vocals. Mm. And I think I would have been just bored out of my mind. Jimmy Buffett, I thought, was a jazz group. I don't know why. In my mind, I thought it would be, it was like Jimmy Buffett and his jazz trio. So I took that gig, and then they sent me a bunch of CDs and some albums. And I started playing them and realized it was not jazz. I started crying because it was so country, some of the older stuff from the 70s. And I'd never done country and I didn't think I would fit. I mean, I'm straight out of Arrested Development, locks in my hair, two rings in my nose. So I called my mother crying and I was like, it's country. I don't think I can do it. I'm not going to fit in. And she said, do you need a job or don't you? And I said, yeah, I do. So she said, do it for a year. And if you don't like it, do something else. So as I'm listening to the music, I hear a song called Why Don't We Get Drunk and Screw? And I realized I had heard that song about 2 weeks ago. I'm driving in my car and it came on the radio. And my first thought was, they'll play anything on the radio these days. Little did I know that a couple of weeks later, I would be on stage with that man. And I would be there for 28 years because there was something about the joy that Jimmy's music brought to the people that just kept all of us there. Grief interrupted. You keep me laughing through my tears. Cause you, Jimmy Buffett, you bring joy.
It's clear that you love what you do, and it's great that you continue doing it. Are you still writing music?
I am. I have four CDs, some house music, and some more I call soul. And then the last album I did was my tribute to Jimmy, and it's called Nod to the Storyteller. Mm-hmm. And that's the album I'm going to be doing in its entirety when I get to the Kranich Center. And then I'm also going to be doing some of my original material.
Can you name your top five R&B artists or other genres if you like any?
Okay, so I'm not a young girl. My favorites are old school, Stevie Wonder, mm-hmm. Donnie Hathaway. I love Ella Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. I love Jill Scott. And I've recently fallen in love with Beyonce, believe it or not, in the last couple of years. I have a cousin who is a big Beyonce fan, a member of the Beehive, and she's taken me to three Beyonce concerts, and I really, really love the way people leave her concerts feeling. So I would have to throw her in there too.
Yeah.
I like CeeLo and I love A Tribe Called Quest. And my favorite house DJ is Oshun Lade. And he's also my best friend.
Oh.
And he and produces most of my house music. And I like him because he takes us on a musical journey throughout Africa and the world. He's traveled a lot, and his house music is, I label it ancestral house. The drums, and it's just the journey he takes us on is wonderful. Anyway, so yeah, those will be my favorites.
I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. This was so fun.
Well, thank you so much, Kim. I enjoyed it too.
The final two pieces of music in this interview, Grief Interrupted, which was written after Jimmy Buffett's passing, and Chocolate Star, were previously unreleased by Nadira Shakur and Oshun Lade.
You were listening to new music from Nadira Shakur, who performed at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in late February. Earlier, she talked about her musical journey with our Morning Edition host, Kimberly Schofield. You're listening to Dialogue, an Illinois Soul. Let's shift from music to comedy.
Hey, yo! What it do, baby boobs? What y'all think about this little film crew I brought in here? Oh, yeah, I can help you make your video.
Really?
Yes, this is what I do.
Well, you're also a principal, so.
Yeah, but this is my art. I write, I edit, I direct, I do the music, I lip sync. Because of me, when people say that their favorite director is that Ava lady, somebody else got to be like, which one?
Actor Janelle James portrays Principal Ava Coleman on ABC's top-rated Abbott Elementary, a comedy about an under-resourced Philadelphia grade school. But as she told Jimmy Kimmel Live, her comedy career began here in Central Illinois.
And you started doing stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. And where did you start doing stand-up?
In Champaign, Illinois.
Champaign, Illinois, home of the University of Illinois, right?
The native of the U.S. Virgin Islands performed extensively in Peoria as well. Late last year, James talked to Brian Mackey of The 21st Show about how she broke into the entertainment business.
I was in Illinois and I had moved there from New York, so I didn't have like my friend group yet. I didn't really have any much to do. And so when that guy handed me that, Andrew Voris, his name is, and handed me that flyer, I was like, oh, I'll just go check it out. And I checked it out. It was the first time I'd have been to a comedy open mic or a comedy show, period. And it was cool. I had a good time. And then at the end of the show, some of the comedians came over and they were like, hey, you know, if you wanted to come back next week, which I had already planned on doing, they were like, but you could also do a set. And I said, what does that mean? And they were like, you get 4 minutes and you can also tell jokes. And so I went home and I thought about it and I wrote some stuff down and I went back the following week and I did my first set. And then I just kept doing it every week after that.
Eventually you start performing in Peoria, Illinois, regularly.
I did, the Jukebox Comedy Club, which is still there and has been there for I think decades. That became what's called my home club. And so I would go there every Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I started as a feature, which is a middle. And then eventually started doing longer sets and headlining, but doing comedy there, like the Jukebox is situated right in between Chicago and St. Louis. And so I was able to meet so many headliners that were like on their way from Chicago to do their shows in St. Louis. They would stop and do a date or a weekend in Peoria. And I got to meet all those people so that when I eventually moved back to New York, I knew a lot of headliners already. And that's gold.
Talk about that call from Chris Rock. What was that like?
I had, through the Jukebox, had met Todd Berry, who was the first person that I went on tour with. Then I went out with Rob Delaney, who was huge at that point. He was, if you don't know him, he's like the first like Twitter comedian. Like he was like one of the first comedians to amass like a million followers. And he did like a sold out tour across the US and took me with him. So that was amazing. I was only like 4 years in then. And then when I got back to New York, Because of those things that I had done, I was able to get on a lot of shows and get past at a lot of clubs. My phone rang and it was an unknown number, which I usually...
Yeah, send that to voicemail. Come on.
Yeah, private number. Yeah. I think maybe that was the first time I even seen that like private number on my phone. And usually I wouldn't answer that, but you know, it was Christmas. I'm like, oh, a family member or something. I don't know. I answered it for whatever reason. And it was him. And he said, Janelle James, Christopher Rock. I was like, only Chris Rock would say Christopher Rock, you know, that told me that was a real call. And he was just like, you know, you're very funny. I'd like to take you on tour. And I was just like, okay. And so, yeah, I toured with him for a good while after that. And that was amazing.
That was Abbott Elementary star Janelle James talking about getting her comedic start in Champaign and getting picked to go on tour with Chris Rock. Next, from homeless to the top of the charts, musician Melina Moy reflects on her journey. This is Dialogue from Illinois Soul. From Illinois Soul, I'm Reginald Hardwick. Let's catch up on some events around town. The first UICon takes place March 2nd and 3rd at the Illini Union. It's a free anime and comic convention. From March 6th until March 12th, the Common Ground Food Co-op is offering special sales to all co-op owners. And on March 28th and 29th, the Humanities Research Institute at U of I will present the Sporting Public's Symposium. One panel will discuss Black professional athletes and the intersection of race, sports, and masculinity. And Professor Lewis Moore will speak about his book, I Fight for a Living, Boxing and the Battle for Black Manhood. Check out these events at illinoisoul.org. You're listening to Illinois Soul on WILL FM 101.1 and 90.9 HD2 Urbana. Welcome back to Dialogue from Illinois Soul. I'm Reginald Hardwick, News and Public Affairs Director at Illinois Public Media. This is our weekly conversation about Black communities in Central Illinois. And this week, we're talking about Black women making their marks on music and comedy. Singer-songwriter Melina Moy is known for her unique way of playing the guitar. She also lived unhoused for a time in Los Angeles before releasing her first number one album. Last fall, she performed at Elnora Guitar Festival at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Before the show, she spoke with Morning Edition host Kimberly Schofield.
Melina, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Melina, you have so much that you've done in your career. You came from a family of musicians. Yes. And when you were little, I know your dad, Dr. Funk, which I don't know that you called him that as a kid.
No, you know, we called him Dad.
That checks out. I know that he gave you a guitar. So my question is twofold. One, what was that experience like when you got that guitar from him? And then two, was that the moment or was there another moment where you realized that you also wanted to pursue music as a career?
I specifically remember my dad basically gave me a guitar and I was like, man, this is the first time he gave it to me. I said, I don't like this. I couldn't play it. And then when he left the room, I took the guitar and I flipped it upside down and started playing it backwards. And when he came back, then he was like, this is backwards. So I was like, yeah, daddy, but this feels really good. I'm a natural left-handed person. So he gave it to me like a right-handed player and it just wasn't working for me. So, you know, a few years later, he gave it to me, picked it up, left the room. I turned it upside down. I was like, this fits perfect. I love this. This is incredible. And I just was off to the races ever since that moment. And I think for me, just seeing my mom is a singer and plays percussion. And then watching my mom and dad on stage, you know, as a kid, my mom would always tell me that I couldn't speak, but I was always trying to sing and I would grab the mic and I would just get on, like make a fake stage and try to perform. So I always knew this is what I wanted to do.
You were the first African-American woman to perform the national anthem on guitar at the Minnesota Vikings and Dallas Cowboys game back in 2010. Was that amazing for you? Were you like, oh, it's just another day?
Well, the first time when we did it, I was, you know, I was like, man, this is going to be super cool. My thing is, I hope I don't, I don't want to mess up. I mean, because, you know, really, I'm like, it's 80,000 people. I mean, it's like a whole other level. I was so in the moment that I had no idea that there were fireworks going off. I had no idea about all these things that were taking place. I literally thought I thought I did a bad job. And then I realized I had my in-ears in and I took them out. Then I heard. The energy of it is unbelievable. And then when we finished, I remember them saying, you know, this is a historical first. And I'm like, really? And they were like, man, never has there been a woman come and playing the electric guitar at a major football or any sporting event and having the guitar be the lead as the instrument rather than a voice or, you know, an acoustic. I said, I had no idea because I know Jimi did it, Jimi Hendrix. And so to do it, I was like, this is amazing. And then I guess it was true. I'm going to speak a little bit about what it was like to come to Los Angeles with $20 and I was homeless. I lived in the street. Literally, I would wash up in gas stations and live off of 2 tacos and water a day. And I would park my car in places you weren't supposed to park and put clothes over my head and I'd have a knife and a Bible. And I would say, don't tow, car broken. And speaking about the experience from coming from that, looking on the ground, putting pennies together, taping them up to eat, because I just believe in my goal and my vision that much. And then finally being able to score my first number one record.
I mean, already going to LA with absolutely nothing and coming up to where you are now is amazing. But have there been any other roadblocks that have really stuck out to you?
Absolutely. What's so funny is in life, as you find the one thing that you love, and for me, being a guitar player and being Black, being a woman, being a left-handed guitar player who plays upside down. So I already have 3 things. In the beginning, to me, this seems normal. Like I never look at myself as anything other than what any other guitar player would look at themselves as. And what happens is the higher up you go, you start to realize that a lot of women, and for me specifically, I say a lot of African-American women haven't been in certain spaces. Mm-hmm. And it's not because we don't want to be in these spaces. It's because these opportunities did not exist. And even so, that was the reason why I truly wrote the song Enough. And nothing that you say to me will make me let you shackle me. Was because I started seeing all this media. And I'm like, man, this is just so not fair. You put all these different people on these covers, but when I'm looking inside, I haven't seen one Black woman that you have on the cover of this magazine. To be fair, this particular magazine, they put this woman on the cover and I thought, this is amazing, right? And then I remember looking inside and I thought, oh my God, you list one person and everybody else is dead. The way you're seeing the vision of what's happening in America, in the world, in my mind, it was like, you're not being fair to everyone. And the way I see it, I'm like, I put the same amount of time in as these other people that you're highlighting. We're all playing the same notes. We have access to the same thing. But I just kept realizing, wow, it has nothing to do with my talent. It is the fact of the DNA of America and the DNA of what people are accustomed to. And I thought, well, geez, what if I wrote a song? Maybe if this guy heard how I was feeling and understood how he is not being fair, maybe I could change his heart and then he would change his mind and then he would open the door and give more of us opportunities.
In the music video for your song, Fine, F-I-N-E, you have this striking, beautiful outfit. It's set against this American flag. The music video seems to take us all across the country. Tell me about this video.
That song is a song where I said, hey, you know what, let's try something different. Let's do an instrumental. So many different elements in that video that I wanted to project and that I wanted to talk about. First of all, the song's called Fine. And the reason I had came up with this title was because during the pandemic, I just felt like we all have come through so much. And my dad would always say to me, Melina, how are you doing? And I always would say, oh, Dad, I'm fine. I'm fine. And he would say, oh, I see you're still effed up, insecure, neurotic, and emotionally unstable. It's funny, but then I'm like, I guess he kind of has a point. Only because I'm like, we're going up and down. There's so much happening right now. We don't know what's going on. So the best way I could just put my feelings out there, I thought, was I'm going to play. And I'm going to take you on a journey. So when we did the video idea was to take you through a journey of America and to show you the beauty that we have. And then also for me, there were elements of the clothes. What I wanted to project, and thank you for picking that up, is with the do-rag. Back in the day, they would classify African-Americans to separate us by us putting on certain things on our head because they were saying that we weren't beautiful. It was a way just to hide our hair. But I wanted to project it as something that is absolutely beautiful. A piece that we want to use to project beauty and to add another dimension to us and to take away the stigma of what people generally thought of it as. And also when you look at the colors, again, I can't tell you how many times people always say to me, gosh, Melina, you know, you're a really good guitar player. Are you wearing these clothes because you're trying to make people not listen to you because you're trying to hide the fact that you might not be good or something? I'm a woman and I love these clothes. So I'm all about do you. That is a space that I want to share and show. As a woman, we can look like a woman, whatever the lipstick, the makeup, the diamonds, just be unapologetically yourself. And as I like to say, just for me, hopefully just exude, just I'm here and I'm not going anywhere.
Melina, you sound like a trailblazer in this industry. Is there any advice that you would give to young Black girls? They sometimes get pigeonholed into thinking that singing is the only opportunity they have in the arts and entertainment world. What would you say to them?
When I was young, I thought the world owed me everything. Boy, so much has changed.
When I'm speaking to my sisters, I would say, just know that no matter what, people are always going to want to count you out. Just know that, which is why I always say these, the thing that my parents said to me, when you don't see yourself represented, show up. When you think you can't, show up and always know you matter and you count. Your main job is to show up and do the best delivery of what you can do. Even if that makes other people feel uncomfortable, even if that makes other people feel like this makes no sense, you need to go do it, be happy, throw it away, and move on.
Thank you so much, Melina.
Thank you, Kimmy, for having me. It's such a pleasure.
I hold the cards for me to conquer my possibilities.
You're listening to Dialogue from Illinois Soul. Victoria Vincent is a rising star in the Chicago comedy scene. She started her career as a healthcare worker and still holds her medical license. In February, she performed at the Illini Union. Vincent also spoke with Kimberly Schofield about her success as a Black female comic.
I am a rich kid. Let me say something. You can be Black and privileged and still amount to nothing. In my defense, I didn't know I was a rich kid. I think my dad is the only surgeon who exclusively eats at Cracker Barrel.
Victoria, thank you so much for joining me. Nearly your entire family is in the medical field. How did you start to pursue comedy?
It took a minute. I think I kind of fought it, just seeing, like, you know, especially because I'm, you know, African American and, you know, seeing successful people in medicine or just in life. It seemed like medicine was such a highly respected job, and watching the respect that my father received as a surgeon. And that kind of pushed me towards medicine. But I was like 11 when I asked for Stephen Colbert's book for my birthday. Like, 30 Rock came out when I was like about to start high school. So I was obsessed with 30 Rock, and I was obsessed with like the writing process, and I just became obsessed with comedy writers, but it was always a hobby. You know, I went to college pre-med. I graduated with a physiology degree and went on to do that program, and then was working in medicine. And then I was like, okay, now that I have a stable job. And once I got that job, I was like, okay, now you can take a look into this like hobby. you know, I don't want to say I didn't think I'd be this good at it, but I never thought of it as a creator. I always thought of it as a social aspect. And the first time I was on stage, even at an open mic, I just fell in love with that feeling and I couldn't stop doing it. So, you know, for 4 years, I was doing both. This is my first year doing comedy full time. You know, I got into this festival that's a really big deal for comedy. And I was like, okay, maybe you can do this. And then it just kept, I kept getting more and more opportunities to where at a point I couldn't deny it.
You mentioned being an African-American when you were thinking about medicine and thinking about your career. What is it like being an African-American and a woman in the comedy world?
It's definitely interesting. I love it. Like, I seriously love doing it. And what I find is that I've had such a unique perspective. I think that there is a chokehold we put on people in any form of entertainment or anything when you're in the spotlight where they have to be a certain type of way. So when I became a comedian, that was like this weird alternative girl that people expected to be more someone who was white. I think that really like shook people for a while. Like the stuff I'm into is not what society forces onto us as Black people. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what's made my comedy successful in some aspects where it comes to like, if you know anything like about code switching, where it's like, you know, a lot of people talk about the aspect of applying, being able to relate yourself to all crowds. I grew up in a lot of white spaces. I mean, if you've seen my TikTok or anything I do online, that's what my experience is talking about. The experience of being a Black person in white spaces my whole life.
I had a lot of white friends, not for any particular reason. You guys are just always around. Statistically. I think my white friends thought they were getting a cool Black friend, but I was like, buckle up. I used to play The Sims for 12 hours and read fan fiction.
And people laugh at those things, and it's funny, and it's fine because that is the social commentary, right? It's funny because you didn't expect it. And that's what my whole thing is. I was always into comics and anime, and I was into punk. And I was very much an emo kid through and through, still an emo kid. And so I think that gave me an advantage in comedy because to me it did, even though some people are like, oh, that must suck because you feel like you're this one outlier out. But I felt like it gave me advantage because I was talking about things people didn't expect. And I'm a weird person. I'm weird. I love being weird. And I don't think they let us be weird. But it is nice to be able to see Black girls just be weird and not having to have our identity tied to a certain lifestyle.
I go to therapy. No, there's no natural segue. I'm depressed. I go to therapy. Does anyone else go to therapy to talk about how funny they are?
All joking aside, Victoria Vincent, who still holds her medical license, says she talks a lot about the importance of mental health in her comedy, and she hopes to normalize the topic through her stand-up.
My thanks to Kimberly Schofield for her interviews with singer-songwriter Melina Moy and comedian Victoria Vincent. Zachary, the artist, is a poet, muralist, and rapper. Learn how growing up in Decatur shaped her music. Dialogue from Illinois Soul continues in 2 minutes.
Stepped inside my school with no teachers that looked like me, forced to Google pictures that said my hair was done unprofessionally. It's the little things that bother me. Mommy, how come they only give me peach crayons? Do I look peach? Today, my friend told me my Skittles were too dark to be her friends, but I like all my...
You're listening to Dialogue, a new weekly news magazine focused on the Black communities of Central Illinois. I'm Reginald Hardwick. Zachary Moore, who goes by Zachary the Artist, that's Zuh-C-A-R-I, is based out of Springfield and grew up in Decatur. As part of our focus on Black women in music and comedy, we're bringing you an interview with her from the 21st Show, conducted by Brian Mackey. She talked about the death of a loved one and her musical journey reflected in her poetry and hip-hop.
All I hear is madness. Every time my mama talks to me, all I see is sadness.
As her name suggests, Zachary does a lot of different forms of art. Besides being a rapper, she's also a poet, model, and a muralist. And with us to talk more about her art and work is Zachary herself. Welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm excited.
So let's talk about your stage name. Why Zuchari, Zuh-Cari, as opposed to Zuchari as your sort of given name?
Okay, so a while ago, whenever I first started getting into music, and it was around the time when I was trying to release my first project, Do Not Disturb, we came across a problem. Somebody else had their name published as my government name, so I couldn't get my name published. You guys might know him. His name is Zuchari as well. He has a song with Kendrick Lamar called Love off of his Damn album. So I had to change my name. And I know that sometimes, I know growing up, it was hard to pronounce my name, especially with teachers, and I would always have to be like, it's Zuchari. So I might as well just have that as my artist name, you know?
Yeah, it does make it easier to pronounce, I will say that. So talk about, how did you get into music? Have you always been passionate about making music?
It actually didn't start with music. My family has always been musically inclined, though. My grandma on my dad's side, she was a singer, and my dad was also in a male singing group back in the day. But for me, though, my artistic side started through my drawings and poetry. Growing up, I found a love for the violin as well, and was first chair from seventh grade to my freshman year of high school. Learning to play by ear helped me realize how I could match my vocals to this note too. I didn't take advantage of my voice though until like my junior year of high school when I auditioned for the talent show. There I won first place, and I was rewarded with beats, a radio interview, a show, some studio time. But around that same time is when I had lost my brother to gun violence in Decatur, and he ended up being a spark that ignited my release to the album Do Not Disturb. The first couple tracks that were on that project started as we wanted to drop them as singles, but then I was like, I could just turn this into a whole project. That project was like a guideline of what my grieving process was for when I had lost my brother. From the beginning, it's like the first stage is a grief, and then it goes all the way to the end of like acceptance, and I'm still kind of trying to accept that, and that's, you can see that going into my next album. But Do Not Disturb, it covers topics like police brutality, implicit bias, systematic racism, and then also like gun violence and what I see going up in Decatur.
Well, maybe this is a good opportunity. We should listen to a little bit. This is from the song Zintro from the Do Not Disturb EP.
I walked outside unknowingly knowing I had something on my back today. Stepped inside my school with no teachers that looked like me, forced to Google pictures that said my hair was done unprofessionally. It's the little things that bother me. Mommy, how come they only give me peach crayons? Do I look peach? Today, my friend told me my Skittles were too dark to be her friend, but I like all my Skittles. I started to notice what was on my back today. Closed my locker door to find a security guard staring at me. The tardy bell rang. The hallways were empty. He grabbed my arm and pushed me into the dean's office. I was looked up and down and felt what was on my back coming to the surface. The secretary grabbed my shirt and stapled the words, keep your child out the sun so much. I ain't have no skin condition. I felt the target that was placed on my back today. I heard them joke.
Talk about your writing process.
Okay, sorry, that just got me so hyped. But my writing process for that song, well, poem, I had split it up into three different, I guess you could say point of views, but they're all in my speaking. The first one is like me aged as an adolescent, growing up, not really knowing what racism is, coming into the world, still trying to figure everything out, and having these experiences and coming back home and still trying to just decipher them. And then the second part goes into like my teenage years, going into middle school, all these problems that I had to grow up into. And then the last part is like me now and still trying to figure out my way into the world, but noticing and taking note of all the things that are wrong with the world and what I can do to change them.
You mentioned your brothers, losing your brother to gun violence. Who was your brother in life? Tell us about him.
My brother, his name is Keith Brewer. We lost him back in 2018. He was in prison for a few years. And then when he got out in 2018, I think it was around June, we were ecstatic for him to come home. I was the only one home at the time, actually. And he played football. His number was 89. We had a, I'm not sure if it was a club, but we had a place down in Decatur called Old King's Orchard, and he played football through them. Sorry, I'm getting a little emotional.
So you say he came home. What What happened with him, if you're comfortable talking about it?
In 2018, it was 3 days before his birthday. It was Labor Day, actually, I think. September 3rd, 3 days after his birthday, he was in a roundabout in Decatur, the south side of Decatur, and someone, I guess, pulled up and asked him a few questions. They acted like they was turning off on him, and then they ended up shooting him. And he was with somebody as well.
I'm so sorry for you and your family.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You channeled that, your grief, into your art, yeah? How do you take that grief and channel it into art?
As a kid growing up, when I started with poetry, it was always the poetry, everything that I wrote was dark. And I feel like writing from then and now, like, has always been my outlet. It's always something that, like, if I couldn't talk to people or if there was something on my mind, I would always be able to just turn to my journal and write through there how I felt, even if it wasn't like logical sayings. I'm not sure how to say that, but even if it just came out in metaphors, like, that's how I was able to express myself.
I want to talk about your entry into the Tiny Desk concert, which is how we learned about your work, called How It Feels. This is a new song you submitted. When I can't beg a stranger for some EC and mama stressing, trying to make two ends meet, breaking down and crying at a grown white man's feet. They tell me how I feel to see your brother go to jail, pray you go to heaven, knowing you already in hell. Gunshots and fireworks, you don't forbid a fairy tale, but the difference is that you can't even really tell. And tell me how I feel. I don't know. Talk about that.
Okay. My song, How It Feels, it was inspired in the dedication to my brother and others like him. It's on my unreleased album that I haven't dropped yet called Imperfect. So the way you spell that is the I and the M is in parentheses and then imperfect. So the purpose was to present different point of views from the people I seen growing up, as well as vividly describing my experiences growing up as a Black girl in the hood, quote unquote, indicator.
You also mentioned earlier that you writing poetry. Talk a little bit more about that.
Poetry, at first, it started out as just something I kept to myself. I didn't really see like a future with poetry or music at all in general. I thought I was going to be doing like basketball or volleyball or something that entails sports. But my, sophomore year of high school, I started writing poetry more. I was in a speech class. I found out like that this was something that I actually enjoyed. And then I just ran with it.
I understand you have some poetry to read for us today.
I do. I have a lot of poetry. I didn't know what you guys were in the mood to hear. All right. So the first one I have here for you guys is called Click Boom. There's two types of flashes a Black boy knows. The flash from their second mugshot picture, click, boom. And the flash from the 1+8 that got them in that cell, click, boom. I'm not talking math nor science class. Seeming as though that Black boy couldn't learn nothing from either of them anyways, because Black boys aren't taught in white boy schools these days. Black boy taught to one, grow up, get a job, stop messing around. Two, grow up, get a wife, stop messing around. Three, grow up, boy, stop having babies. Stop messing around. He heard grow up three times and was still told he had to be the man of the house. Sorry, I'm at his daddy's house. For the fourth grow up quotation being yelled into his ear by his adolescent Black mama, Black boy was just 13. 13 years old and Black boy lost three homies and still don't know how to grieve. Black boy don't have Black school counselor to vent to, just a white lady behind computer desk who Black boy is forced to go to, not to express his feelings, but for discipline on why he acting out in class. Lady, this is not acting, this is real. Black boy is crying out for help, but laughing and disrupting is the only way he feels he can get this attention. Detention, detention, go to detention. Detention, detention, retention. Black boy can't cry, so Black boy pretending to be okay. Possessing all these suppressed emotions, so now the only thing he possesses is that 1+8 that got him in that cell in the first place. Revenge in the hood is just an endless cycle of pain from a Black boy given to another Black boy because they killed my homie too. And one day that Black boy gonna be gone and another Black boy is gonna be taken in retaliation of his. Flash, click, boom. There's only two types of flashes a Black boy knows. The flash from their second mugshot picture, click, boom. And the flash from the 1+8 that click boomed him into the afterlife too. And that's all for that one.
Wow. I'm just processing that still.
It is a heavy one. I had wrote that back in February 2022.
You can feel the emotion and your passion about it.
Thank you. It's definitely a heavy topic. Growing up in Decatur, you see a lot of kids going missing and childhood friends going missing and people just disappearing. And Decatur really is turning into a ghost town. And it's sad to watch.
Did you want to read your other poem?
Yes. This one is called Black Is. I have wrote this a little after Juneteenth last year. And here goes. Black is. Black is dirty. Black is hidden. Black is negative. Black is the black sheep. Black is non-existent. Black is the absence of color, the absence of pain, the absence of absence, the absence of. Black is. Black Monday, black plague, black mail, black market. Black is criminality. Black is the bandana wrapped around the face of a criminal. Black is scary. Black is hostility. Black is aggression. Black is. There's a black man walking by my house. I need police here right away, please. Black is. Black is beneath me. Black is night. Black is walking under street lights, knowing your mama said, bring your black A home. Black is seeing primary colors with badges holler at you. Come here, boy. What you doing walking around these parts? Where you headed, black boy? Isn't it funny how the color black is associated with everything negative, but I still have to mark my job application with black. Black is a black mama finding the remains of her son sprawled out on Martin Luther King Street. Black is, nah, not my baby, Lord, no, please. Black is black. Black is me. Black is on purpose. Black is strong. Black is struggle. Black is something ghetto. Black is hustle. Black is. And that's all for that one.
When people who have not lived the experience you're describing in these poems, how do they react to you when they hear that?
Honestly, in awe. I've done a couple shows where I've done poetry as just the only thing that I do. And they're left with no words. They have to feel everything. They feel everything that I'm saying, because it's all genuine and true.
What do you hope people take away from your work, broadly speaking, music, poetry, art?
I want them to know that I'm a person that they can relate to. My 19 years of being here on this earth, like, I've been through a lot, and everybody goes through things. Everybody has trauma. I want them to know, like, I'm that too. I'm them too. We're all connected. We're all going through something. So if we can relate just off of what you heard in this song, even though our lives are completely different, that's all that matters to me.
Zakari, the artist, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your story and your art with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you so much for having me, y'all.
Silent speaking, city grieving, we on such a name. Daddy leaving, time receding, keep my head on straight. If I could escape it, I would. If I could change it, I would.
With that, we'll close today's dialogue. Tell us what you think about our show by giving us a call at 217-244-1989. Again, 217-244-1989. Dialogue airs Saturdays at 11 a.m. and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul, FM 101.1 and FM 90.9 HD2, as well as WILL AM 580 on Wednesday nights at 7. Our music theme was produced by Lamont Holden. And special thanks to our contributors, Brian Mackey and Kimberly Schofield. I'm Reginald Hardwick. Dialogue and Illinois Soul are brought to you by Illinois Public Media, which is a service of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We'll dialogue with you again next week.